books to life. Vision without sight.
Blood Roots, an Andy Carmichael case, a paranormal thriller. Written, dramatised and produced by Be Here. Andy pulled the Merc up to the barrier of the building and slid down the window. The guard in the cubicle leant forward without looking up and said,
"Good morning, miss. How can I help?"
"I'm here to see Carl. Come on, Doug. Eyes up."
The man's eyes shot up and he smiled.
"I'm sorry, Miss Carmichael. I was engrossed in the CCTV from the other gate. My apologies."
"No need for apologies, Doug. I take it he's in? I'll park in the usual place round the back, should I?"
"Yes, he's in. And yes, that's fine. Have a good day. It's good to see you again. It's been a while."
"Yes, it has."
He pressed a button and the barrier raised itself. Andy moved the car forward and turned left to follow the road to the back of the building, where she knew she could park. As she drove, she looked up to her right. It was still an impressive sight, even after all her years of coming to it. It was one of the Secret Service buildings that not many people knew about. From the main road, it was at least a mile to get to the gate, and the Grand Georgian Manor House was nestled behind a line of trees and formal gardens that sided the driveway. She loved this building, not the memories of her time here, but the building itself. She eased into the space and extricated herself elegantly from the car, knowing she was being watched, probably from a window and on the CCTV. She was feeling edgy about returning and had made sure she had dressed in a fashion that would make her stand out. Jeans and a t-shirt would do amongst all the suits. Even casually dressed, she knew she looked a knockout. At 40 years old, she still had a figure that a 25-year-old would give their hind teeth for. Slim, athletic, and everything still in the right place. She wasn't going to give anyone watching the pleasure of seeing her struggle to get out the car. She gave a little smile to herself and wondered why such a thing would bother her at all. But she knew these people, and most of her ex-colleagues would take great pleasure in thinking her life had gone down the drain. Andy walked across the gravel driveway and up the few steps that led to the door. As she opened it, she saw Carl striding towards her.
"Hey, great that you're here. I'm really sorry about yesterday. Must have just been the situation. No harm done, though, huh? Well, except for my jaw, that is."
"You asked for that, and I'm not going to apologise if that's what you're fishing for."
"Come on, let's get into the office and I'll tell you what we know. And then we can talk about what we need and why."
They walked back through the reception hall and down a corridor to a door at the end of the building. Carl punched in a number and laid his hand flat on the plate near the door handle. It opened to reveal a room with a circular staircase leading down. Carl led the way down the circular staircase into an area that was bustling with people. Some looked up as they entered, but most just hurried about their business. At the end of the office space was a large oak door. Carl entered and Andy followed him. On the walls were TV screens depicting scenes of different areas of the country. His desk was large, wooden, and tech of all kinds was strewn around the surface. Carl leant into the centre of the table, picked up a file and a remote, and motioned for Andy to sit. She did. He flicked the file in her direction and pointed the remote at a large screen. The image changed to a photo of the girl they had seen the day before. The sound of the door opening made Andy look up. She was out of her chair and around to meet him in seconds. She stood in front of him, gave him a smile and hugged him.
"Mr. Hadrian Charles Connaught III, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, it's so good to see you."
Hadrian, Skilly by nickname, smiled back at her and returned the hug.
"The pleasure is all mine, I'm sure. At least it is for the time being, until we get back acquainted and you start asking me to do things for you. Really, though, it's great to see you, Andy. How's Jules?"
"Wondered how long it would take you to ask that. She's fine. Well, better than fine. You know Jules."
"Yes. Yes, I do. Though, never quite on the personal level I would have liked."
Andy gave him a knowing smile.
"She misses you and still talks about you from time to time."
He looked at her, dropped his head to one side and asked,
"Really?"
"No, not really. I just thought I might make your day."
Carl flicked the remote, and the image changed to show what looked like a very, very large ranch.
This is the home of Arnold Sol, billionaire from Philadelphia, who has more than a few connections with the Russians, Chinese, and latterly, Colombian families. To say that his dealings with these people are above board would be stretching the truth a little. About 3 weeks ago, local police in Yorkshire were approached by a man called Jeremy Gonzalez. He reported he was worried about his daughter, Gabriella. He hadn't heard from her in about a month. He said she had gone to work for Arnold Sol about 2 years ago, and though he hadn't seen her in all that time, she did keep in touch. She had told him that she was coming to pay him a visit and had phoned from Gatwick Airport to tell him she was here. That was 6 or 7 weeks ago, and the last time he had spoken to her.
6 or 7 weeks? Why did the guy leave it so long?
He said that she had friends here in the UK, in London, and had told him she was going to see them for a couple of weeks before she made her way up. He got a call from one of her friends saying they had found some of her personal belongings in their flat, passport, and thought they had better let her know. Mr. Gonzalez told them she wasn't there and asked how long ago she had left. They said it had been 2 weeks earlier. He thought it odd that it had been so long and went straight down to the police station, taking the photo we have seen with him.
But that photo is 10 years old.
Yes, her dad said she didn't like photos being taken, and it was the last one he had of her.
Okay, so how did we get from that information to digging in the middle of a field and finding the body? And more importantly, why did this particular missing person land on your desk?
Still as sharp as a tack, I see.
Laughed Carl. Andy gave him a withering look.
The local plod did some digging and found that a bank card had been used only 2 days previously at a pub in the village that owns that field. They passed the info on to the local police at Share in Surrey, where the pub was, and they paid a visit. Turns out the barmaid remembered her but said she hadn't been in for a few weeks. She remembered that she had come in with an American. They'd argued and gone out the back of the pub into the field. Well, she didn't think anything of it at the time, as they had paid and, she assumed, left. She remembered, though, that the American guy had come back on his own a few days later with another girl, and he had paid using a card again. The officer had gone to the pub, took it upon himself to walk the field, and he noticed that the earth had been disturbed at the far end. He said it looked like a badger or a dog had been digging. He got down to look and saw what he thought was material, so he called it in. By complete coincidence, his sergeant was one of ours and recognised the name Arnold Sol. He called us just in case there was something connected. Odd how these things tie up sometimes. And that's how we ended up there. I called you because I knew there had been some talk that the Sols and their connections had been linked to shady rituals, cult-like, to coerce girls into running cocaine across borders. Your kind of thing.
What the hell does that mean? How is cocaine smuggling my kind of thing?
He does have a point, Andy. You were the only one of us that was seconded to that wacky ESP division. And cults do have a reputation of utilising rituals that can only be described as supernatural or satanic in nature.
Oh, so you're on his side now, are you?
Their attitude was starting to get her back up, and she could feel herself becoming defensive.
You know that what we were doing there had nothing to do with weird satanic rituals. It was all about how we might be able to enhance communication and understanding in the field, not Satanism.
Andy, numerous times you have come up with connections and information on cases that others haven't been able to work out. Call it whatever you want. You seem to have an intuition about things that others just don't have. I need you on this case. I need that intuition. We might have a chance to nail a big fish and pass the info on to our American buddies and bank some goodwill. If we can tie this back somehow.
Andy sighed. They were right, of course. She knew it, and knew that they knew it. What they didn't know was how she came by the extra information she did, and she wasn't about to tell them. They may well be trained to accept the unexpected, but she was sure that if she told them she was in contact with voices, they would shuffle her out the door pretty sharpish.
Okay, all right. I'll give you that one. I do have a knack for these things. Have we got the body back here yet? Can I see it? Is there anything unusual?
Great. You're in then.
I said okay, didn't I?
He smirked at her, God, how she hated that smirk. She would gladly help remove it from his face.
Yes, we have the body. It's in the lab. An old friend of yours, Bryony, is looking after it and digging up what she can. Let's get you down there.
They stood. She picked up the file.
Can I have this?
Carl handed her a USB stick.
It's all on here. And it's encrypted. Skilly, will you give her the detail?
Yeah, sure. Call in on your way out and I'll sort you out with that. And any tech kit you might need.
They left the room and Skilly peeled off from them. Carl and Andy headed to a door at the rear. As they pushed through, he handed her a brown envelope.
This is for you, to help you chase down the case. New passport, new cards, driving license, and cover notes. Oh, and some cash.
You were pretty sure I would take this on, then?
You know me, always prepared for any eventuality.
Before she could reply, he was ushering her through another door and into the lab. Bryony looked up and smiled at Andy.
Ah, just like old times.
Andy liked Bryony. Always had. She was meticulous, smart, and not afraid to do what she needed to help things along, even if it was against the rules. She had a fearsome reputation in the forensics department. Yes, Andy liked her.
Okay, I'm going to leave you to it. Andy, call round the office on your way out. I have some things I'd like to get clear. Procedures and that kind of thing. And don't forget to speak to Skilly.
He turned and strode out of the room.
He hasn't changed, has he?
No. Did you expect him to have? Unless you count the fact that he really is even more conceited than he used to be.
They both laughed at that.
Is there anything unusual?
Nothing of real significance so far. We do know that the rate of deterioration seems rapid for the length of time she was in the ground. Though it could be due to a number of factors. We haven't discovered the actual cause of death yet, which seems odd. But we will. As soon as I have anything, I'll let you know.
That sounds good.
One other thing. The team performed a thorough investigation of the site, and they found nothing of particular interest, except this.
Bryony reached for an item on the worktop and handed it to Andy. It was a small piece of jewellery, like a brooch or pin. It was shaped like the Tree of Life, but it was intersected with a lightning bolt, and the tree itself had what seemed to be fruit on it. On closer inspection, they looked more like drops of blood coming from the branches. Andy looked at it, and then up at Bryony.
It was clutched in her hand, so we have to presume she grabbed it from someone or made a conscious effort to have it in her hand at the time of her death. Either way, it must mean something.
Andy turned the pin over in her hand. A chill ran down her spine and her murmuring started up.
Can I take this?
Yeah, sure. Just remember to return it when you're done. The case is yours. You can have what you want.
Okay. Thanks, Bryony. Let me know if you find anything of interest.
Will do.
With that, Andy turned and left the room, still holding the pin and staring at it. She made her way back out and called in on Skilly to pick up her passwords for the USB stick. She had no intention of going to see Carl, so she left the same way she had come in, got into the car and drove away from the building. She hadn't made it more than a mile when her phone rang. She could see it was Carl.
You didn't call in as I asked you to.
No, Carl, I didn't. I really didn't need one of your lectures on being circumspect and how important this case was. I know all that. I'll call you when I've made some progress.
She hung up just as she heard him start to say something. The satisfaction she got from that small act was disproportionate to its effect. But hey, it was the small things in life that made it worthwhile. She chuckled, threw the car around a corner and gunned it for home.